That which God has created is real and cannot be destroyed, only that which man has evolved out of himself must be left behind to perish. Surely you can see that during the last 50 years of your time the barriers of unreality have broken down, one by one. Indivisibility is becoming an accepted principle of the life of mankind. Barriers of class and greed, of pride and prejudice and fear, have been torn down after the terrible conflicts which have shaken your civilization to its insecure foundations. Nothing that man attempts which does not have the seal of goodness has any enduring success. How can you find peace and security in such conditions? The truth is that the influence of the cosmic Christ is intervening in the affairs of man, destroying the false facades hid so much misery, preparing the ground for a new world, when all things shall be made new, when all men shall bow the head to the rule of the Christ of love. Obviously, he is not coming to Christians alone. He will not claim any one church for his own. His church will be the hearts of men and women, one great heart beating with love for him. And that must clearly include all discarnate souls as well. Zeros stood up and it seemed as if he filled my small room with his presence. He spread wide his arms as if to include all of humanity. My son, the lives of men are not broken on the wheels of chance, for all are participating in a great redemption. For the Father's sake be tender, because of the broken heart of the past, be strong to help the soul of the present. Already his physical body was beginning to fade, giving place to a more radiant form which shone so brightly that I could scarcely bear to look upon it. His voice became inexpressibly tender and sweet. Heavenly Father, Eternal One, strong to help and swift to save, may thy love enter into the hearts of all thy children, flashing from soul to soul, awakening the spirit to a new revelation of their divine nature. May those who suffer feel the warm glow of thy Christ's healing light. May they take up their cross of suffering and fix their minds upon its emancipation and its power to redeem and release. For a few wondrous moments the shining form stood silent as waves of spiritual power radiated from him. For one eternal moment we were both wrapped in unutterable peace. Then he faded from my sight. Somehow I knew that my room would never be the same again. Chapter 13. The New World. By this time Zeros had ceased to make appointments when he wished to renew our experiences. He had now linked his mentality to mine to such an extent that he was able to make his desires known without physical contact, and to receive my acquiescence in return. He and I were old friends now, for we had made so many excursions into the past and adventured in thought so many times that I no longer felt any strangeness in our difference in dimension. Our minds met on one plane of thought, and after all that is what really matters. He had often hinted that a link existed between us springing from the past, but nothing would induce him to expand upon that subject, nor would he allow me to glimpse any part I might have played upon the stages of past existence. I suppose my past is too murky to be told, I would suggest, jokingly, hoping to spur him into some personal revelation. I have only myself to blame in that he would neither give assent nor dissent to that suggestion, but merely smiled inscrutably, inferring that any such knowledge could not be for my benefit and might endow some particular phase of our record with undue distinction. In the early days of our adventuring, I had usually experienced some discomfort and nervous strain as I embarked upon, and returned from, some travel out of time. But as the months rolled by, these physical effects diminished so that I was enabled to slip out of physical consciousness as easily as out of an old suit. In the incredible adventure in time and space which Zeros had used so adroitly to make known to me, not only the real history of man but the reality behind his existence, I had come to regard him with a deep and abiding affection. It now seemed to me to be the most natural thing to look upon him as my constant companion and advisor. At the appointed time I would regard his chair, instinctively knowing that he would already be there, preparing to slow down his intense vibrations so that I could make sense contact with him. Now a rather special occasion had arrived, for I knew that we had finished with the past, and future visits outside of my accustomed dimension would be in violation of our accepted principles of time. I knew that the further astronomers peer into the depths of space, the more does time evaporate into timelessness or becomes purely relative. But I was still held in the limitations of a three-dimensional mind. Prophecy was something I could not understand. So it was with a thrill of conjecture that I waited his next visit. Yes, there he was, the first faint impress on the padded seat as his form slowly became subject to gravity. In another moment he had arrived, as naturally as if he had just stepped into the room. In my eagerness I told him how excited I was to have reached the threshold of new time. Ah! Time, he smiled back at me indulgently. It does confuse you, I know. Yet to live in timelessness, as we do, saves a great deal of trouble. We think only in terms of progress, that is our form of time. But then we do not have to struggle to feed and clothe our bodies. So I will give you a little picture to aid your understanding. You sometimes go to the cinema and take your seat in the stalls. A picture is shown and perhaps it covers a great period of time, representing several generations of the same family, but with an unbroken theme. And you, in your stall, are so impressed that you link yourself with the events depicted, you become part of the story. You are the hero or heroine, you identify yourself with him or her. Yet you have not moved in time or space, you are still in your stall and only an hour or two has passed. A soul incarnates, putting on a human garment as a means of contacting the conditions of the environment it is about to enter. Although standing still in eternity, not moving in infinity, the soul observes all the events marching by, to such an extent that it feels it is taking part in them. It is as if the soul were watching over a loom in which myriads of threads were being woven into a fabric, with a specific pattern, and having some little control over it. Its destiny lies in the pattern being made, but it can alter that pattern slightly, for good or for bad. But here is the point, you do not each have a loom of your own. The loom is so large that its pattern applies to every living soul, each of which is interwoven with that of the others. There is mutual influence between them all. You have your personal destiny, which you can affect by your actions and which is built up out of your experiences of the past and the action of your free will, and there is heredity and environment which provide you with another form of destiny, and then there is your national destiny, the fate of the country to which you belong or to which you give yourself, and finally there is world destiny, the destiny of the whole race of mankind. I expressed my appreciation for this helpful picture. But, I queried, I do not see how you can show me the future when it does not comprise a completed pattern. Patiently Zeros replied. You and I have traveled together through a portrayal of the past, that was comparatively easy because the events had crystallized into form and made their pattern. We merely recaptured them. The future we shall see will be a synthesis of events built up by those who can see a great deal further than you can. It cannot be exact because it deals with destiny within the toils of time. I can tell you with exactitude the destiny of the human race, which is to be reunited with its creator, because that is a consummation existing outside of time. It is already there, in existence at this moment. Only in your prison of time, your experience, are you still traveling towards it? In spirit you do not travel anywhere, you are where you wish to be. He smiled at me. You cannot grasp that? Well, never mind, it does not really matter. But remember that God exists and plans outside of time. You could not possibly imagine him wondering what is going to happen next. He creates in whole complete ideas. In his mind the earth has already reached the end of its destined career. He cannot fail. You may say that the earth has already passed the nadir of its destiny, which was to aid the rehabilitation of mankind, the fallen race. Now it is on the upward arc of its redemptive purpose. It doesn't look like it, from all appearances, I protested, somewhat cynically. Only apparently is it so. In the past man has accepted defeat after defeat, refusing to learn the obvious lesson. But now at long last he is beginning to see the light. There is a widespread search for new understanding of what life and its problems are all about. Conditions have improved so much that events in some obscure native village become known the world over. Your world is shrinking. And so opportunity arrives for a far greater measure of divine intervention. Time is coming to mean less to you than it did, though you might not think so. Try and realize what God is trying to accomplish, without enduring harm to your souls. He aims at becoming conscious in the hearts of men and women. And owing to the darkened nature of man's soul, that is something which must be attained very slowly and carefully, lest the soul be destroyed. He accomplishes this through his incarnate Son, the prism which steps down his tremendous power so that it heals but does not harm. In this way the whole community, incarnate and discarnate, is being redeemed and uplifted from the degradation of what you term original sin. Nothing worthwhile is being lost. And as man is being restored towards his former pristine self, so is the earth itself being lifted in vibration to what it was intended to be. I spoke my thoughts aloud. That is almost too wonderful to be true, but I still have a feeling that it is unjust to blame the whole of posterity for the sin of the original souls which fell. Zeros answered, patient as always, choosing his words with care. If you have a united family and one of its members commits a crime or defrauds, does not the whole family unite to restore the family honor? Each member is an individual, but there is something greater than the individual, the family of which he forms a part. Without the sin of the family is less than it might have been. Even though the law may punish the culprit, the family usually wishes to make good the loss. And are not all souls members of the family of God? Can they be a perfect unity as long as one remains outside? And if we postulate that the progress and prosperity of the whole family depends upon that unity, then we can see how each soul which is aware of its position would be ready to make the necessary sacrifice. It is essential to grasp this truth of the unity of humanity if you would find any sense or justice in what God is doing with His creation. Without it, all is unjust, cruel, meaningless. If you cling to the notion that a soul commences its existence at human birth, it is just as bad as supposing that any soul which refuses Christian doctrine is doomed on Judgment Day. Survival presupposes pre-existence. You cannot have the brotherhood of man for which you long without accepting its implications. It is going to be very difficult to bring this idea home to people, I said, soberly regarding my companion. Zeros nodded. It would be impossible for you to accomplish alone. But remember, what you are about to do is part of a resurgent movement, set in motion by powers not of this world. The whole world of men and women is crying out for spiritual understanding. They have freed themselves largely from the rigid doctrines of their various religions, but there is nothing to take their place. We have to play our part in supplying a new understanding. The upsurge is already in progress. It is part of the preparation for the future. But, I put in, I have noticed that there is an insidious implication in modern thought that man is an animal in origin, having evolved through mutation into an intelligent being. You can find that being implied in radio talks, in school teaching, in technical books, even in some churches. The finest thinkers in our time accept it. How are we going to combat that? That is very true. But it is a passing phase. It is the swing of the pendulum from the orthodox ideas of past ages, where it was thought that man was descended from one man and one woman. Science has much new knowledge along biological and anthropological lines, and has interpreted that knowledge in the only way possible to intellectual understanding. But already such thinking is meeting with difficulties. Science, on the higher levels of research, is finding itself lost in conjecture, for its dimensional understanding is merging into the undimensional, so that all its findings have to be reconsidered. Scientists are finding that the cosmos knows not the meaning of beginnings and endings, and they are pondering how man himself, the cream of creation as far as they know, can have a beginning or an ending. The key to all this is the knowledge that the cosmic Christ is working through the minds of men the world over, bringing to them a new revelation which is slowly filtering through into their consciousness. The time is coming when there can be no arrogant assertion that one particular faith or religion is true, and all the others false. It is the age-old esoteric Christianity coming back into focus, with all that that implies. You mean that something new to our experience is occurring? I put in, as I tried to set our own moment in time, into this new advent. Yes indeed, replied Zeros with enthusiasm. It is something very new, quite novel to what mankind has known in the past. The might of the Creator is pressing through the cosmic Christ into the minds of men and women the world over. Every nation, every tiny village, every individual, is responding to it in many various ways, according to their interpretation of what it means. To some it means new discovery, to others a wider appreciation of how the other half of the world lives, yet again others interpret it as a need for some ideology. They glimpse the truth, but for them the vision is distorted and they interpret it in terms of self and perhaps express it through domination. It may seem strange to you that some of the ideas expressed through totalitarian regimes, often cruelly and despotically, owe their inception to the influence of God. It is not his fault that they are misinterpreted, for he has to pour out his spirit upon humanity. That is the only way in which they can be redeemed, from within themselves. But the wind has to be tempered to the shorn lamb, otherwise man would be destroyed. It is a long slow business, but now it can be speeded up, as is evidenced by the increasing tempo of your lives. This invasion by spirit stimulates both good and evil in the mind of man. You cannot inspire one without the other. Evil flocculence, that is to say the distortion of the elements of the earth, has long been hidden within its chemical nature. It was latent in tradition, in inhibition, it was dormant in the subconscious, but now the time has come to release this wrongful flocculence into manifestation so that it might be recognized for what it is and eliminated. Some parts of the earth were saturated with it and no enlightenment could be hoped for while it was able to exert a contrary influence upon mankind. It had to be disinterred. So it is that it has been stirred into violent eruption during the past 50 years or so, with all the sad results you know. There is meaning in all that occurs, the divine goodness in creation working always to defeat the ends of injustice. How true that was, I thought, though one could never prove it as if it were an equation. It is clear that the principles upon which human reasoning is based will have to be radically changed before we can begin to assimilate the truth. At present one has to absorb truth through an inner recognition of verities, yet undeniably that conviction is a powerful one. When you really begin to understand divine principles, misunderstanding and strife will cease. At first strife will be lifted from the material to the mental plane, a war of words instead of weapons, that is already happening. Your world is changing so rapidly that none could postulate the conditions of life even a decade hence. Already your scientists know a great deal, often much more than they are prepared to admit, even to themselves. They are getting to the heart of problems of weight and density and are finding their conclusions most disturbing. Very soon they will be able to suggest means of overcoming gravity. Metaphysics will emerge as a new science, already its boundaries with physics are melting away. But for this same direct inspiration is needed to overcome the resistance which rational understanding offers. The very word rational will have to be stepped up in meaning. No scientific experiment or discovery can ever be really or fully successful where it is not in tune with a desire for goodness. Your knowledge of atomic energy could have done nothing but benefit humanity to untold lengths had it not been first directed to destruction. A growing recognition of this strange intervention into human affairs must cause an eventual change of heart in every race and every individual whose soul is awake. It is because the mind of man, of humanity, has reached a stage in its development, in its unveiling to a knowledge of what it really is, that the cosmic Christ can and must take over the reins of government through direct inspiration. You cannot hope to build a new world along purely material and scientific lines. The evil latent in mankind will always operate to defeat such altruistic ideas. The animal nature in man must first be eliminated. The present trend suggests men as saying, You tell us we are evolving from animals. Well, let us have our animal enjoyment. We like it. Can you not see how such an outlook must denigrate any hope for future peace? Such perverse thinking must soon reduce a community to the lowest ebb. But of course that cannot be. All is under direction and control. For despite the growth of so-called rational thought, it has not gained hold of the majority of people and will not do so. If you recall that you are living dual lives, the life of the spirit and that of the human mind, at one and the same time, you will see what I mean. The one is inarticulate but transcendentally obedient to divine will, the other is vociferous but its logic is skin deep, for it is not based upon realities. Do you think this change will come into fulfillment soon? I asked, all eagerness for the answer. Zeros smiled, a smile that seemed to come from deep within him. How impatient you are. You get your world in a mess and you want it all straightened out in a moment. The present era is still part of the Dark Ages. The immediate future may be known as that of destruction. The breaking down of powerful defenses erected by the ignorant minds of those who think they can defy omnipotence. There is a deep distrust of anything new that might upset the even tenor of existing life, a tenor that is already broken by unseen causes. That distrust is due to ignorance of the insight and understanding that might be yours, because you pin your faith to material things which you know and can analyze. In proportion to the speed with which this relation filters through into human consciousness sufficiently for a fresh step forward to be taken, so will the perfect moment draw near when the veil of ignorance and misunderstanding may be drawn. A mischievous smile lit the corners of his mouth, as he added, "You can work that sum out for yourself." His voice became serious as went on. There is of course the possibility that man will still reject the message, and in that case there must be terrible catastrophe. You cannot oppose such a tremendous sweeping power as the will of God, without injury. It is omnipotent and must sweep over the minds of men and women where it is not allowed admission through the free will. The scales of divine justice are absolute and cannot be deflected. Only in time does it seem that they are out of truth, even as a straight reed in the water seems to bend. Warnings of this eventuality have been given from time immemorial and should be heeded. In the highest realm of all, prophecy is an exact science. In the realm of perfection, where all is known, where there is no chance, no beginning or ending, no time or space. Only as you descend into manifestation and gather the chains of time and space and dimension about you, does prophecy become distorted by what you term chance. And I am nowhere near the top of the scale, so I cannot tell you what will happen. But remember that to the mind of God every event is known and prepared for, even to the falling of a leaf. But that is only a short-term view. I prefer to take the longer view, in which the splendid fight of man against self, the noble against the ignoble, is preordained to succeed. It can be delayed in time, but what is time to creative mind? The consummation is certain. All souls created are to be recovered, that is what matters, and they are not really lost, it only seems to be so. None can be lost, for their spirit is at home with God, and they have not the power to sever themselves from their own spirit. Through defiance of the good they separated themselves from it, through suffering they must return, that is the only way. This renewal of human existence will be astounding and quite beyond the present limits of human understanding. For one thing, man will have to realize that he shares his divinity with all created things, and that includes the animal kingdom. He has taken terrible toll of the animal creation and it has infected his instincts with an animal nature. Not only must he learn to divest himself of this illicit impregnation, but must give it back to the animal kingdom through love, thus sharing in the redemptive plan. To a lesser extent, he will have to learn to understand the realms of vegetation and the mineral kingdom and to cooperate with them, for they too shared in his fall, thus they will become less crystallized, more loosely knit, with a progressive change in character. You are aware that there is a vast range of angelic beings, some of them quite elemental in form and intelligence, which will need to be taught to love and be loved by man, where between them there has only been fear or derision. Without them your natural world could not exist and you could not live. You owe them a deep debt of gratitude for you have imposed upon them an intolerable burden of work, restoring and rectifying that which man has done wrong. While all this regeneration is going on, there will be a progressive elimination of all that is noxious to human existence. The harmful animal life, the poisonous bacteria, the barbs and traps of natural creation, will gradually disappear or change their nature so as to be helpful instead of harmful. The lion will lie down with the lamb in very truth. Overcome with this dazzling prospect, so marvelous that it surpassed the bounds of reason, I made no comment. Yet, I thought, why not? If man is to swing up the arc of his salvation, there must be some such transcendent movement. If man's evolution is to take a leap upwards, surely his environment must follow suit. Zero's voice broke in upon my thoughts. I am telling you this so that you may be prepared for what you are about to witness in future visits. Remember that man is but a perambulating mind. His body is but a vehicle through which he may make contact with his environment. If his mind is to be released from its bondage, it could surely make little progress if it were still to be hampered by a malignant nature, besetting him at every step. There could be no point in it. Man is already growing up and stepping out of the age of authority into the age of reason. It remains now for right values to be substituted for those false ones upon which he has based his reasoning. Credulism, whether in religion, politics or social economy, must give place to a growing understanding which knows no ceiling. I asked Zeros how he saw the governments of the world operating in the future. I do not see any sort of world federation coming into being, there would be no need. Federation is a sort of lining up against adversity. Instead there will be, as now, a democratic form of government through enlightened choice. And how can the choice be anything but the right one when men's minds are illumined by truth? Once man realizes what he is and how useless he is in himself, how dependent upon divine guidance, then all difficulties will be removed. There will be no more war. As I have said, none would be prepared to go to war against God. But there will be a colossal ignorance to cope with. There will be much rebuilding to be done, both mental and physical. Instead of your armies warring against each other, they will go forth to war against all that holds man back from gracious living, to tame nature, to teach the people how to live the new life, to inspire and to heal. Yes, it will be a sort of divine theocracy, God governing through the receptive minds of men. For how could man plan for himself better than his Creator, who knows all? Half the troubles of your world would vanish overnight if there was a change of heart due to a new knowledge of what man is. Inevitably there must be loss of human life, due to the fact that the darkness in the hearts of some will not let them face up to the new life, the new brightness. But they will start life anew in other surroundings, for God's love spares none. The key to the new world lies in the words, "You and I and my Father are one." Remember those words. Once they are realized, the channel opens right from the source of life, down into the recesses of men's hearts. However far man has fallen, it is not too far for the light to penetrate into the darkness, if only he will permit it to do so. For the Christ of love comes to make captivity captive, thus releasing the soul into the sunshine. I smiled to myself as I said, "That is a very different idea of heaven to a state of unalloyed bliss." The idea of static bliss is appalling to a human nature which has had to be endowed with fighting qualities, the demand for action, for speed, for overcoming difficulties. These qualities were essential for a fallen race in order to equip them for the fight against the stranglehold which evil forces had over them. Once that fight is over, the need for such qualities will disappear and other qualities will take their place. When there is no longer any struggle to live, because conditions are so much easier, the contemplative life will replace the life of overcoming. Human existence was never designed to drop to such a low level as is at present displayed. At the outset you have pure spirit, undefiled but inexperienced, not conscious of love because there is no contrast by which to judge it. And at the end of the journey, powered through free will, and supposing there can be an end to such a journey, You have a spiritual being returning to its source, having achieved a triumph of identity and learned to merge that identity with the source, enriched by experience. That mergence is not loss but gain, it is a divine companionship, a unity of being without which life would hold nothing.